the Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Tell me what's going on.
I never thought I'd be calling you.
I hope you're going to agree with me.
Well, no, I'm sorry.
I'm not into predictions, but you want me to make a prediction?
But you're a psychologist. Do you have some advice?
I don't know. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
Yeah, I really didn't want to call you about this.
All right, let's answer your question and give you some good news.
Yay.
You're my second favorite Italian person.
You seem like an honest guy.
A lot of people suffer when they have to listen to me. So at least you're getting your daily dose of suffering right now.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
That caller didn't have to say that she was sorry for disagreeing with me. Now, she should be sorry for being wrong. I got that part. But not for disagreeing. Good to have you with me. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. Program, as always, the Doctor Is In. Here on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network, some 400-plus stations. Sirius Satellite, Channel 130. All kinds of web streaming places you can go and podcasts. A lot of people say they listen on podcasts. Every time I think of that movie, you know, Attack of the Pod People. Of course, that's me. 877-573-7825. 877-57 equal is the number to call to get onto the program if you would like to ask a question about something in your life or someone that you care about or someone you're struggling really hard to care about or not to completely dislike, or if you have something to help somebody else, a proper reference, or a generic question perhaps, as it is something in the sphere of psychology that interacts, interfaces, intertwines with a faith question. That'd be okay, too. So, 877-573-7825. I want to just do this because we're going to probably be close to the last time I'll be able to say anything like this. Season 10 has been difficult to produce because of the COVID condition. Season 10 of Living Right with Dr. Ray, the TV show on the EWTN Global Catholic Television Network. We tape them. Usually, well, we have the first 9 seasons before a live audience. Live audience is part and parcel of the show. It is the heart and soul of the show. I am just the mouth of the show. Well, we couldn't get a live audience this year, so we've done some other things. And one of the things we decided to do was to have a virtual audience. But virtual in the sense that not you're just sitting there and watching. You are participating. You're doing exactly as you could do if you were in the audience. We're going to set up monitors, 20, 25 people per monitor, 3 monitors. I will be in the studio by myself doing the program along with my guests. I have Al Cresto as one of my guests. I have Janet Smith as one of my guests. I have Father Joe Krupp as one of my guests. And this is the funniest priest you will ever meet. I can talk to you, you can see me, and you can talk to me. We've already got questions coming in that people are going to ask on the program. So it'll be a live interaction program. The only difference is you'll be at home in your bunny slippers or your Afghan over you. Don't doze off, please, during the show. It looks really bad. We'll have to put those little black things over your eyes so people can't tell who you are. If you'd like to be on the program, which will be taped November 30th. And that's coming up here. It's less than a week away. November 30th, the program times are 1:30, 4, and 6:30. Now, obviously, the programs are not 2.5 hours apiece. Usually about an hour to an hour and a half will be a time commitment. If you'd like to be part of it, we'd love to have you. Like everything else, the more people, the better. Also, we're getting close. We're getting close to being filled up. Real close. So we can take a few over because there is typically a no-show rate, which isn't good. That's not good. If you've committed, we got to have you. Go to drray.com/virtual, and you can sign up. And then close to the date, we will send you the link. You just click on it and there you are, magic, on the program. Will you be seen by people? Yes, you will. So do not pick your nose and wear a pair of clean pajamas. But you will be seen because we will have a camera facing the monitors. So there's my pitch, there's my spiel, and I'm sticking to it. I'm going to do gratitude tomorrow. And I wanted to do what is intelligence today. But as I look over at my time here, I'm pushing the 7-minute mark, and I don't really like to go much beyond about a 12-minute mark on the opening monologues. Let me do this one. It's shorter. Not unusually, someone will be in my office, either as an individual or in marriage counseling. They will confess, I give and I give. I'm so tired of giving. I'm going to be concerned about me for a change. Now, the average rank amateur layperson, notice I didn't say layman, I almost did, layperson would listen to that and might think, oh, this is a giving person. Gosh, this poor person, he or she is just, they've just been giving for so long and they're just exhausted. You know, that kind of lopsided giving can be very exhausting. That has not been my experience when I hear that. With further counseling, further therapy, further marriage counseling, as it all unfolds and the pieces of the puzzle start to fill in, it sometimes, if not more often than not, becomes apparent that this is not a giving person. Really giving people don't focus heavily on how much they give. It's like the old saying, a good person doesn't talk about how good they are. Matter of fact, a good person probably underestimates the goodness in their behavior. I give and I give. That's all I do. I'm tired of giving. I'm going to worry about me for a change. Those are red flags to me. And, of course, I don't challenge them. Initially, I can't. I can't say, well, wait a minute. Giving people don't talk like that. No, that would be a very dumb idea, because that person would probably walk out of therapy. I listen, and I watched it progress through counseling. Now, do I ever challenge that statement? Not directly. No, because if someone is really locked into emotionally that perception of themselves, I'm not going to rattle it. However, it's something for me to keep in mind, because, and this is like anything else, and you've probably noticed this on this program, a lot of times what people say is communicating something very different than what they think they're saying. It happens all the time. That's why the old statement, you're telling me more about you than you're telling me about me, for example, when somebody gives you a heavy, undeserved criticism. You got somebody in your life that says, I just give and I give, and I'm so tired of giving. Okay, you might want to just let it pass. But keep in mind, perhaps, that this is not necessarily a real giving person. And this may be someone who has, for some time now, been much more concerned about themselves, particularly true when they're talking about a relationship, like a marriage, and they're using you as a sounding board, and they want to convince you how wretched the person is that they live with because they are so saintly in their giving. Now, I do give. I just got to tell you that. I give and I give. But, you know, but I'm just not tired of it. That's all. That's the difference. 877-573-7825. 877-57-equal. That's the number. Would like to hear from you. Appreciate it and would be pleased by it and all the other positives.
Call now for great advice from Dr. Ray.
Now, don't you feel better?
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
I was raised a Catholic and went to church every Sunday faithfully. I met a boy and he was non-Catholic, so I left the church to be with him. When I was away from church, I yearned to be home. What brought me back was my longing for the Eucharist. The Eucharist fills me with a spirit that you can't find anywhere else. I have a peace when I walk through the doors of the Catholic Church, like that's where I belong.
We invite you to take another look at the Catholic Church. Visit CatholicsComeHome.org today.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. Well, because of COVID constrictions, we've been forced to get creative. We are going to tape some episodes of Living Right with Dr. Ray, the TV show on EWTN, on November 30th. But they're going to be virtual, which means you can be part of the audience. We're going to have three monitors up in the studio. I'll be in the studio. I can talk to you, and you can talk to me. You can talk to the guests. They can talk to you. This will be great. Now, we're going to do it on November 30th. The times that you have as options are 1:30, 4 and 6:30, November 30th. You go to drray.com/virtual today, because the numbers are going up fast. We'd love to have you. We got a limit of 60. Dr. Ray, DRRAY.com/virtual to reserve your spot. We'll send you the information. Hope to see you. You know, I try to communicate well. I had an interesting communication experience last night with my wife. She said to me, "Raymond, are you even listening to me?" And I thought to myself, that is a funny way to start a conversation, isn't it? All righty, let's get to your phone calls. Brian is calling from Canada, who has called before. Now, Brian wants to give me an update on the situation. Andrew and Eric, would you please put the 1 minute broadcast delay in effect? Normally I have a 7 second delay, but 1 minute delay in case Brian tells me how wrong I was. I just want to get rid of the whole minute of finding out how wrong I was. Hi, Brian.
Hello.
Yo, Brian.
Hi, Dr. Ray. How are you?
I'm okay, sir. Now keep in mind, we've got a 1 minute broadcast delay on you in case you say, "Dr. Ray, I did what you said, and it just absolutely stunk."
Okay. I didn't. So with the response, I may have missed your show. It was from August, and it was just with my six-year-old. He's been displaying some OCD separation anxiety since maybe two or three. And real quick, he was getting a little better. And then once the COVID started, he kind of went down again, and he fixates on these, asking the same question over again, like, "Is it broken? Is it broken? Is it broken?" Asking my wife, "Does my screaming make you old? Does my screaming make you old?" And we tried doing the one time only, and then he starts having meltdowns. Like I said, in March, April, it was like 2-3 hours. He was fine, and now he's starting to ramp it up again. And we're not sure why.
Neither am I. However, okay. I can tell you that this stuff tends to wax and wane.
Okay.
The fact that he perseverates with these thoughts and these questions is probably something to do with his temperament. You know, that's kind of he has an inclination that way. Okay. So the question becomes, how extreme is it going to get? I think you mentioned when we talked, or it might have been an email. I don't remember, Brian.
In an email, yep.
Okay. That when you refused to answer his question, or you said, "Okay, you're being rude and you're interrupting us, you have to go sit on the steps or you have to go stand in the corner," when you did that, he stopped. And but
no,
then
he
threw a fit.
Yeah.
Is how it got worse. He didn't stand there and continue just to yap at you with his same thought. Here's the thing, and I think I mentioned this in the email. One of the best ways, if not the very best way, to overcome the anxiety caused by a perseverating kind of experience. In other words, do you like when I yell? Do you like when I yell? Am I asking too many questions? Am I asking too many questions? You think I'm asking too many questions? Is to not let it happen. And the person can find out that the anxiety that they thought they would feel eventually abates. It declines. Now, the one good thing about being a six-year-old is that he has parents that can set up some guidelines to this. If he was 36, there wouldn't be anybody. Unless he listened to a therapist, there would be nobody to say, if you confront this anxiety, it will eventually, in most cases, go away. I would suggest that you tell him, okay, when you ask something one time, we'll answer it. But after that, we're not going to answer it. And if you ask a second time, you're going to have to go sit down and calm yourself down. At which point, he throws a meltdown. He throws a fit, basically.
Yep.
So now this is a confusing picture, Brian. Because on one hand, there is this habit, and we don't really know what it is, but it's a habit that he feels he has to get this repeated answer from you. And until he gets it, and by the way, how do you ever satisfy him? When is answering him enough enough? How many times?
Well, it might be he won't do it as much with me because he knows, but I kind of start getting upset with it, and I'll say it's just silly and just learn to let it go. Give it up to God, let it go. But with my wife, he'll persist, and then he'll hear it once, he'll hear it again, and then he'll be okay for a bit, and then maybe, he'll calm down, the screaming, the crying will end, and then, maybe another hour later. So you promise it's not broken, or?
I would probably do something about the fits. The fits bother me more than the repeated questions.
Okay.
He's throwing a major league fit at age six. He's not three. Okay, he's just deciding that if you don't do what I want, I'm going to erupt. And the fact that he does it much less with you than your wife tells me there is some kind of personal control there. He can control this, at least somewhat. So I personally would operate out of a one-question rule. I answer you. After that, you have to go sit and calm down until you're ready not to ask the same question or stand in the corner. And when you throw a fit, here's what I'm going to do about it. For today, you have no privileges. Zero. That's it. Because he's getting,
I
doubt it, but he's getting into a habit, and this habit is fueling itself. I had, and I think I mentioned this in the e-person that I did, I had a friend whose daughter was five, and she was becoming very, very, very obnoxiously clingy, obnoxiously so. Mom couldn't leave the room. If mom had to go get food from the cafeteria, line, the daughter had to grab onto her and hold onto her. And I suggested mom needed to stop that and stop it firmly because the daughter was getting herself into a real routine. She was emotionally distressing herself over this. Well,
yeah, it's like him.
Went away in about a day. And that
a
daughter
day?
Is now,
wow.
Yeah, about a day. That daughter is now 15. She's a delightful human being. A lot of times with these kinds of things with kids, you just have to put limits on them because if not, they will just go on and on with this kind of stuff. Now, I can picture somebody saying, I can hear somebody saying, Dr. A, what if this is a true obsessive compulsive disorder? Well, one, we don't know that, and I can't make that diagnosis from here. But even if it, quote unquote, is, and it's not a hard and fast line, you can't go, oh, he either has it or he doesn't. No, he's somewhere on the continuum. And we don't know exactly how much of this has just kind of gotten locked in to something he's gotten used to doing. And it may have started out with a bit of obsession, and now it's becoming magnified because he keeps doing it. And the more you do it, the worse it gets.
Yes.
So at this point, I would suggest, like I suggested in the email, you might want to just simply say, okay, here's the way we're going to handle it. Here's what we're going to do, son. We're not going to go through this anymore because it's distressing you and it's really disrupting our family. Now, can you get your wife to do that? I don't know. But
it could go on for 2 hours and he'll scream and cry.
Well, that put him in his room. You don't have to hear that. I mean, he the fact that he's gone on for 2 hours tells me something. If I were to guess, it tells me not that he is in anxiety distress. It tells me that he's really, really mad. That's what it tells me.
Okay.
And furthermore, if he were in anxiety distress, I wouldn't expect the incredibly loud, disrupting, nagging fit, which you're probably getting. I would expect more of a quiet sort of distress, maybe a little quiet crying or sitting off by his side and pouting. It sounds like what you're describing is just a mad rage.
Yeah, no, it just keeps going on. But you got to tell me the answer.
I wouldn't. I personally wouldn't. Yeah. But all right. Thank you, Ryan. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you so much, Dr. A.
All right, buddy. Let's go to Ann from Cleveland, Ohio. Yeah, Ann, I went to school in Cleveland many, many years ago, back when they had the flats and back when you couldn't drive through the flats because it just smelled so bad. Hi, Ann.
Hi, how you doing, Dr. Ray?
I am fine, young lady. So you got a granddaughter, but we got another one of these anxiety situations.
Yeah.
Now, how is this anxiety manifesting itself over school?
Multiple trips to the nurse's office, mm-hmm. calls to mom at home. Mm-hmm. I miss you. I'm worried about, I want to come home. I don't want to be here. This was not going on in kindergarten, first or second grade.
So you're saying we're pondering homeschooling her?
They are, yeah. Her parents are pondering homeschooling her.
They want to homeschool her because they just don't want to go through this anymore?
Well, I don't know exactly if that's the reason. I think these multiple trips to the nurse's office are probably weighing heavy on the teacher and the nurse. They had her, you know, they'd gone to the doctor and had her physically checked out. You know, there's nothing physical that's causing.
If it were me and everything's physically cool, I probably would have the teacher, if I were the parent, parent came to me and described this, I would say, well, don't send her to the nurse's office, please. Just have her put her head down at the desk. That's it. Mm-hmm. Your head is at the desk, honey. And then if I were the parent, I might say, if I have to come and get you at school, I'm going to assume you don't feel good, and then you'll probably have to spend the rest of the day in bed.
Mm-hmm.
That usually takes care of most of this, by the way. And when I my first book was called You're a Better Parent Than You Think, and there was a chapter in it called Is My Child Normal? And I talked about the difference between what is typically called school anxiety or school phobia and school resistance. Much of the time, there is a component of school resistance in it. And this little girl isn't going to act out. She's not going to throw a fit. She's not going to rage. But what she's going to do is she's going to say, I don't feel good. I need to go home.
But she does act out with her parents about trying not to go.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So she does mm-hmm. get resistant, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the good news is most of these kinds of situations are school resistance. I run up against a lot less where I analyze the situation and I say, ooh, boy, this kid has got some real fears about something at school. We got to find out what they are, bully or gym or whatever. But I can't say from here, but that's what I would do. Head down, no more trips to the nurse's office. Thanks, Ann. 877-573-7825. Dr. Ray here. 877-57-EQUAL. I'd love to talk to you. Perseverate. That is a good word.
Bishop Robert Barron on the priesthood.
Not everyone who's attracted to the Lord and to a life of service is necessarily meant to be a priest. So there's all kinds of forms. I mean, from, let's say, the Brotherhood, if you want to stay within a formal religious context, but then all kinds of ministries within a parish, all kinds of lay ministries that you can do. So not everyone's called to the priesthood. A priest is someone who is dedicated, devoted to ongoing study and ongoing prayer, to be a spiritual father. As Pope Benedict said, one of his wisest remarks, he said, people want many things from a priest, but what they want above all is someone who's a master of the spiritual life. Hey, I'm great at this ministry, and hey, I'm great at organizing this meeting, and hey, I'm great. Fine, but ultimately what the people want is you're a master of the spiritual life. You got to be, therefore, trained in prayer and theology and spirituality and so on.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Maybe you've been hearing a lot about the need to make a spiritual communion while participating from home in a live-streamed or broadcast Mass. By asking for spiritual communion, we are acknowledging that the Holy Mass is the perfect, best way to worship God. The priest intercedes perfectly for us with God the Father because he acts in persona Christi. This is the time to see that through the priest's representation of Christ's sacrifice on Calvary, we are never separated from our Lord. Jesus, I embrace you and unite myself wholly to you.
Call to Communion.
Through Edmonton Radio, we talk to audiences all over the world. One thing I've found out is everybody in the whole world has the same set of questions. They live the same human life. They all want meaning. They all want love. They all want significance. They want forgiveness. That's the most fascinating thing to me. The same answers work wherever you are throughout the world because we're all children of God.
Called to Communion with Dr. David Anders. This afternoon, 2 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Of course I talk to myself. Sometimes I just need expert advice. I don't listen to me. Ever notice that? We really don't listen to the rational part of ourselves as much as the emotional part of ourselves. Been noticing that? I'm Dr. Ray Guarindi. Thank you for joining me here. I have a call that's semi-disagreeing with me, so that's good. I like that. What did I want to say here? Oh, just one more thing before I go to the call. The governor in Oregon has just dictated that Thanksgiving, you are allowed 6 people in your home. And the governor advised the people of Oregon, if you see anyone who is going beyond 6, call the police on them. Mm-hmm. I'm not making this up. Mm-hmm. Now, many of you have more than 6 children, so you're going to have to pick which kids are allowed to come to your house. Now, maybe the keep the little ones in, make put the 10-year-old out in the garage, I guess. Hopefully it's warm out there. You don't have to be cold. I got 10 kids. How would I do that? Me and my wife with just the kids now, that's 12. No spouses, no grandchildren. What we'd have to do is just keep, like, rotating them in and out. You know, go get in the car, drive around for an hour, then come back, and then we'll switch. And 4 of you can go back out. But the more frightening thing, first of all, I can't fathom that kind of dictatorial power. But the more frightening thing, turn your neighbors in. If you see that, be a good person and call the police on them. I know many of you have more than 4 children. So if you have a spouse, that's 6 right there. What are you going to do with all the other kids? Can't have more than 6, you know. Okay. Now, before I go to Deb, I just want to say a couple things about this. Back in the early days of my career, I was a consultant to 12 school districts. I dealt not only with the general population, the general education population, but also the special ed classes, the behavior problem classes, the learning disabilities classes, the developmentally disabled classes, the multi-handicap classes, all of those. So I spent pretty much 15 years in the schools. And what Deb is saying is right, and I will explain to her why I didn't chase that too deeply. Hi, Deb.
Hi. I love you, Dr. Ray.
Wait a minute. I knew
you were here in Tulsa.
I knew there was a big butt coming, Deb.
But, yes, you're right. My son had an abusive teacher. I had to have him moved to a different group of groups when he was in junior high. He called and told me he lied. That was my child that never lied. He told a lie because she drove him to it. And 5 minutes later, he called again and said that he had thrown up in the nurse's office. And I thought, that's why he threw up, because she was abusing him. I know it. And
you moved him out of that class?
Yes. And they were called pods at the time. They had a group of teachers. I had him move to a totally different group of teachers within that school.
Here's the question. Okay, just Deb, why'd she pick on your son?
I don't know. He really was a good child. I know that everybody thinks their child is good. My youngest one chats all the time about him, but this is the child that's very good. And he usually is a very eager to please type personality, unlike his mother. But he really is good, and I really don't know why she picked on him, and it was never found out. But this was like after Thanksgiving that happened, and then so I pulled him out for 2.5 days, and I said, I don't want him in that. And they said, no, we don't change teachers. And I said, well, then he's not coming back. And so they did say, yes, if he finishes up until Christmas break, that he will be able to move to a different pod. And that teacher, on that very last day that she had him in her class, showed movies to the other kids, showed a movie, and he had to sit in the hall. And he hadn't done anything wrong. It's just that I, like, ruined her reputation by pulling my child out of her class.
Why do you think, Deb, why do you think that, now, you remember I said that when kids have anxiety, I said it can be a lot of factors, and we have to probe it, right? I said a bully or something like that. So I acknowledged what you're saying, but why do you think I didn't push too hard on grandma calling in about the 8-year-old who said, I don't want to go to school? Think.
I don't know, because I also had a teacher when I was third grade that I cried every morning before we went to Mass.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents made me get out of the car anyway, every day.
Here's
and they didn't
why.
Know that teacher was pulling.
Here's why I didn't push it too hard. Do you remember grandma saying that repeatedly they let the little girl go down to the nurses?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, do you think that a nasty teacher would repeatedly do that? Or do you think at some point a nasty teacher would say, you're not sick, cut it out, just sit there?
I don't know.
Well, I do. I think that a teacher who was saying, hey, if you don't feel good, go down to the nurse's office, and she's gone down several times a day. This is a teacher who is very anxious to believe her or at least be on the safe side and say, well, gosh, if she doesn't feel good, I'll send her down there. And then this has been happening for a long time, right? With grandma's report. Anyway, it's been happening for some weeks, I guess. That's why I didn't jump right away quick on that as an explanation. I'm not ruling it out, but it's highly unlikely.
Yeah.
If you have someone that cooperative as a teacher, because I know a lot of teachers wouldn't do that.
Okay.
But that's okay, Deb.
Because I never told my parents that teacher was mean until I was 28 years old.
Wow. Did you write him a letter? Say, hey, Mom, Dad, I'm telling you.
I kind of just realized it, that it wasn't just me, because there was also a boy who would throw up. The boys had to sit behind the girls in Mass, and he would throw up every morning, and I didn't realize.
Well, he wasn't sitting behind you. Hey, Deb, was he sitting behind you? That's a bad sign. You don't want that. I mean, you probably were pretty cute.
But you're funny. But, I think that's why he was throwing up every morning before class. That boy that was in my grade, and I don't even remember his name because I'm much older than 28 now. But, yeah, it took me that long to figure out. Because, see, my parents always said, you have to behave at school or you're getting in even more trouble when you get home. Well, by her abusing me because I didn't write the letter Z right, I thought I was being bad because I was too little to understand, you know?
I'm glad you're
better.
And I
just felt like that could have been what was happening with my son, and I don't know why she would pick on him because he really is a good kid.
I would have wanted to get to the bottom of it.
Too. I can imagine.
I would have wanted to go in and talk to the teacher and get the teacher's perspective on this. Thanks, Deb. Dr. Ray, 877-573-7825. Remember now, you call in. We'll talk to you. We don't put you in order. We put you in... I'll put you in alphabetical order. That's what I think we do.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
I repeat, I'm sure ad nauseum to the guys who are here, a line from Pope Benedict Emeritus now, who used to say over and over again, to be a Christian is not the result of an ethical choice, but the result of an event, an encounter, a meeting with the living God in the person of Jesus Christ. This and nothing less is what it means to be a Christian. So we said the new evangelization is new in ardor. That's a kind of old-fashioned word. What in the world is ardor? Ardor is zeal, fervor, passion. Are you passionate about Jesus? Passionate about Jesus. Are you zealous for Jesus? Are you fervent for Jesus? Are we fervent for the gospel? Are we passionate about helping this world come to know him?
I'm Dr. Stan Williams, and this is the logic of Catholicism. Solanus Casey said, appreciation is as necessary for social order and harmony as are the laws of gravity for the physical world. Have you ever heard an atheist discredit Christianity, claiming that science disproves God? The disagreement, however, is not between science and God, but between science and theology. The discipline of science is how we imperfectly understand nature, and the discipline of theology is how we imperfectly understand the Creator. Imperfect disciplines will always disagree, but the forever harmonious agreement between nature and its Creator is a mystery to be appreciated. Today, remind your atheist friends that science and theology have a ways to go. The rest is a mystery. And that's the logic of Catholicism. Explore more at AveMariaRadio.net. Under resources, look for me, Dr. Stan Williams.
You know, Deb revealed something that is a very common thing for us humans, which is we are very aware of a possibility for someone else if it happened to us. If we personally have a very powerful emotional experience in our lives, and then someone either shares with us something that is inexplicable, or, for example, on this program, somebody would call in and say, okay, here's what's going on at school with my daughter. Because that memory, that experience is so emotionally potent, puissance, that's the first place we look for an explanation. That's very common. For example, if I get an email where somebody disagrees with me, which that happened in 1994, I think it was, last time, and that was my wife. If they say, I heard what you talked about the other day, and I either disagree or I think you missed this, and usually the last paragraph in the email says, because I had a situation very similar to that person's. And so what happens is they take that experience and they extrapolate it. Hey, there you go, Eric. There's another word with perseverate. Extrapolate it. I'm going with the eight words, A-T-E words. It's my vocabulary buffet, eight. To all situations as a potential explanation, if not the main explanation. That's very common. We all do it. We all do it. The one advantage that I might have is that I see hundreds of the same situation so that I recognize that it's the explanations can be very broad. They aren't necessarily tied into my own personal experience. So people say, well, you know, you have 10 kids, so you must know what you're talking about. Having 10 kids has given me some good stories, some book material, and perhaps some insights into fatherhood. But much larger is my experience from you, from people that I see and talk to, because they're a much, much bigger sample size than even my 10 kids. Marie from Lincoln, Nebraska. I think it's one of the few capitals of states that's named after a president. She was very emotional. She said she called last week. Yeah, that's... Oh, yes, Marie, I remember your call. It was beautiful. As a matter of fact, I flagged it for Andrew because I thought that you were just a beautiful caller. Hi, Marie.
Hi. How are you, Dr. A?
Are you better?
Yes, I am. I wanted to tell you that, you know, the thing that I got from what you said was that to find the inner peace. And I have a book that I had gotten at my local Catholic bookstore, Searching for and Maintaining Peace by Father Jacques Philippe. And I've started reading that, and I'm also meeting with my parish priest. I think just a lot of the things that are happening in the culture and in our country have really, you know, I've been a pro-life Catholic all my life, and it's just, it's shaken me to the core. And so I think that what you said to me and also in my daily prayers, I've come to that realization that inner peace is what is lacking right now for me personally, and just trying to find that.
Why would Jesus say, I have come to give you peace that the world doesn't understand? Why would he say that if he doesn't want us to have it? Why would he say, well, I've come to give you peace, except if you get roiled by listening to the news and all that's going on around you, then I can't really expect you to have peace. He knows that, and I've talked about this on the show before, which is I've had to work very hard to restore my own internal peace because it mm-hmm. was coming very easy to me. Things were just pleasant and going nicely, and I loved life, and it was zestful, and, you know, all this goodness and heaven, too, was my attitude. Mm-hmm. And I recognize that at any given time, this stuff can change radically, quickly, not even talking about personal tragedies, just overall type stuff like this. And you're right. So I had to say, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. Get back a little better to focusing on what life is, Jesus. And getting there to eternity.
And I think, you know, in my grandchildren, I have a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old, almost 2, and the joy that they have, and it's just learning from them also, you know, and sure.
You don't throw fits, do you? You don't throw yourself on the floor and throw fits, do you? You don't want to learn that from them.
No, they come to my house, and it's a happy place. There's no crying at Grandma's house.
Well, sure, you keep them loaded up with cookies and ice cream. I wouldn't cry either.
No. No, it's diversion, and it's, let's play this now.
Well, you know, interesting, Marie, so, I just want to share with you something. This is human nature, and we tend to focus on the negative. But if you look at the surveys, the country is much more pro-life than it was 30 mm-hmm. years ago. Much more so. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, the seeking of the hearts and minds of people, Christian or not, is heading in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
So keep that in mind, too.
Yeah, and I think they were, Jeanette had indicated, too, that, you know, we are here for this reason. You know, there's a reason that this is happening, and you know, just kind of bloom where you're planted, and don't forget about, you know, where we come from and who we believe in, the ultimate power in this world. And it's not of this world. It's our Lord.
And look at it also. If there were no God, then all this is just a cold, unfeeling, random universe that happened to somehow allow us over eons and eons to develop a brain that can think. And therefore, all that is happening to us is ultimately going to end and mean nothing. So,
right.
So really, we believe there's much more to that, to life than that. And so, right. As a result, you know, it's like, if I'm going to be distressed, I'm going to turn to God for peace, because otherwise my distress is just going to end in death and I'll never even know I was distressed anymore.
Right.
Thank you, Marie. Bless you, dear. I'll talk to you.
Right. All right. I just wanted to follow up so that you wouldn't think I was I was sad forever.
You were unraveling before my very ears. No, you were delightful. Thanks, Marie. I'll talk to you.
Thank you.
This is Dr. Ray. Thanks. Coming back to talk to, looks like, Mary.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Hi, I'm Al Cresta. Over the last 50 years, we've had some of the greatest popes since the Reformation era. So why are things such a mess in American Catholicism? How do we analyze and confront the attacks we're facing? How do we identify wolves in sheep's clothing? How do we re-evangelize the baptized? Dr. Ralph Martin makes sense of a church in crisis and shows pathways forward. He'll make sense of a disordered world. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and you'll find it in our online bookstore.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. Well, because of COVID constrictions, we've been forced to get creative. We are going to tape some episodes of Living Right with Dr. Ray, the TV show on EWGN, on November 30th. But they're going to be virtual, which means you can be part of the audience. We're going to have three monitors up in the studio. I'll be in the studio. I can talk to you, and you can talk to me. You can talk to the guests. They can talk to you. This will be great. Now, we're going to do it on November 30th. The times that you have as options are 1:30, 4, and 6:30. November 30th, you go to drray.com/virtual today, because the numbers are going up fast. We'd love to have you. We got a limit of 60. Dr. Ray, DRRAY.com/virtual to reserve your spot. We'll send you the information. Hope to see you. Thanks for joining me here on The Doctor Is In, taking your children, grandchildren from the before picture on Bratz Today to poster child for PTA Grandparent of the Year. In a matter of one call. Isn't that right, Mary from Dallas?
Oh, my gosh. You know, you're a little on the low side, Doctor. I could hardly hear you, but...
Can you hear me now? Is it better?
Yes, it is. Much clearer. Thank you very much. So what did
sure.
you say?
Well, I'm taking... This is my goal here, to take children from the before picture on Bratz Today to poster child for PTA Grandparent of the Year. And I said, isn't that right, Mary?
Sounds good.
Sounds like you're worried about a situation.
Very much so. It's hurtful. My daughter and her ex, all right, have visitation rights. Right now that they've been going through for maybe the past, I don't know, 3-4 months or something like that. So this is still kind of new. My granddaughters are 8 and 5. Well, the little one, it's ugly. It's not pretty. So what's been happening these past couple times is that the younger one, the father, when he does have them, tells her that, you know, that, you know, he would really love it so that they were all together, that it's really not his idea, that God, he doesn't know why God is letting this happen. And of course, little Gigi finally, you know, comes home with a stomach ache and all that, and couldn't quite figure it out. So my daughter asked her, and she finally told him this. She goes, well, Dad said he really loves you and he wants you to be here, and I really wish it were normal. And I mean, this is a little 5-year-old, and I don't know why God lets this happen. And mind you, my daughter's not all that religious, you know, so it's like where she kind of started to say, well, no, it wasn't God. And she was definitely at a loss for words, as I was, as my daughter was telling me this. And it was breaking my heart because I was there when she came home with a stomach ache, you know, this little girl. And
why isn't he doing this with the 8-year-old?
Well, because the 8-year-old hates his guts. I hate to put it that way.
Oh.
But, yeah, and she insists, I don't want to come, I don't want to come. And he keeps saying, you don't have a say in this until you're 18. It's not pretty. It's not pretty. So he, the father, accuses my daughter of turning them against him. So the only one, and there's a lot of history there, but anyway, the little tiny one is, you know, she's just like a little baby chick, you know, like,
what is your daughter doing to help her feel better?
Well, she was trying to explain to her, like, no, that's not true. Mommy did want us, but, you know, Daddy, you know, didn't want to. He was doing this. Like, you know, we gave him chances, but he kept, you know, he was abusive. I mean, he...
So in other words, when she tried to explain somewhat of the situation to the 5-year-old, the dad says, there you go, trashing me in front of her.
Exactly. You're turning them against me. You know, that's why the older one doesn't want to come with me. So, and I feel sorry for the baby because I'm trying to explain to her and she believes me, you know. So this, I'm getting that this poor little girl is torn.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt that. I wouldn't doubt that at all, and that's sadly one of the most common things that happens when families break apart, which is the kids become weapons. Oh, yeah.
What would you say, Dr. Ray, if you were my daughter? If you were my daughter, what would you say to the 5-year-old?
I would make sure that she understood, or I can't make sure a 5-year-old understands anything, but I would try.
Right, exactly.
To explain to her that it wasn't anything to do with her, that this marriage is not together anymore, and that sometimes two big people just can't do it. I'm hesitant to say this, although your daughter has no religion, so I'm going to probably be talking from her perspective rather than a religious perspective.
Yes, please do. I appreciate
you know,
it.
That the two people sometimes just don't get along, and they don't get along so badly that they have to live apart for a while. And that's the way it's going to be for now, honey. This is how it's going to be. And I wouldn't put any hope that it's going to get back together, but I would kind of leave it open-ended. That for right now, this is the way it is.
Oh,
and then as she gets older, hopefully she'll understand, oh boy, you know, there's more to this story. Plus, you know what's going to happen? This is what's going to happen, I think. The 8-year-old is going to start telling her, Daddy isn't telling you everything right. Daddy's leaving out stuff. Daddy was troubled. He was here. That's what will probably start happening.
Yeah, she kind of hints at that now, and she kind of, the poor little thing is like, oh, okay. And then Daddy gets a hold of her and bribes her and buys her all kinds of stuff.
Little 5-year-olds can be definitely used that way. There's no question, and parents are not above doing it. It's so much more common, Mary, than you know. The good news is she isn't going to be five forever, and she's going to start thinking a little more broadly and maybe get a better handle on what actually happened to break this marriage up. And at that point, she won't quite be so confused. Thanks, Mary.
Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Bye.
Dr. Bye. I like that. Dr. Bye. I like my street name, D-Ray. Thanks for joining me. Go to drray.com/virtual if you'd like to sign up for the TV show, the virtual TV show, next Monday. Walk with God. Hold your children tightly by the hand. Grandchildren, too, you know. You can do that.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit drray.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.